Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Decade Project on One Heat Minute Productions. This is our Patreon early look at a new series where we cast our eyes back to a decade ago from the year that we're operating from. It's 2024, so we're looking at the films of 2014. And one of my fave guests, friend of the show, hitched a like delectably on-brand choice for The Decade Project.
I don't know what that says about me.
It's like, no, it's so good. It's like there are people who gave me like a few options of like, oh, I'd love to do it again. And this would be a movie I'd want to cover. And this person, like, there weren't options. It was like, I want to do this. And I was like, fucking hell yeah. I love it. My guess, of course, you might recognize his voice, is the terrific Connor O'Donnell, who is one half of the B-Side podcast and great film critic and writer for the Film Stage, post-production wrangler as he is in his real natural life, is back on the show. Connor O'Donnell, welcome back, my friend. And tell the listeners what movie we're covering in case they haven't already read it on the podcast description.
Indeed. To be accessible out there in case they couldn't read it, we are covering the Kenneth Branagh directed Jack Ryan : Shadow Recruit.
This quarterback had the situation. Somebody tried to kill me.
Jack, is work okay?
Yeah.
You know, you sold this as an office job.
Why don't you sit down? Now talk me through your very scary scenario. Keep in mind, I don't have your PhD.
Tokyo, London, the United States, it's gonna be a wipeout. We'll never see it coming.
You're not just an analyst anymore. You're operational now.
I have to go to Moscow.
Why don't you want me to come?
Because I'm going to be working the whole time. They play rough over there, Jack. Victor Chirivin is unpredictable.
You Americans like to think of yourselves as direct. Perhaps you are just rude.
Perhaps you're just touchy.
Jack, you got another problem.
What are you doing here?
You lied to me for 3 years.
Can we have a minute, please?
No. This is geopolitics, not couples therapy.
Partnerships are delicate, Mr. Ryan. Sometimes they end violently.
What the hell is going on here?
Sometimes the ones closest to us are the ones we should trust the least. We all have our secrets.
You think this is game, Jack?
They will bring us to our knees without even firing a shot.
There's a very real scenario here where we don't get out of this alive.
We are compromised.
If you find the truth, will you believe it?
my God.
I think informally called in its initial promotional release, Jack Ryan Shadow One, I believe.
Shadow One.
Yeah. And I think they changed it after like very early promos. But yes, that's what we're talking about. And I mean, you mentioned it being on brand, and it totally is. I think anybody who already has, if you don't listen to the B-side, you should. But
yeah, 100% you should. What are you doing?
You certainly know that I have a deep love for Chris Pine. He's just a dude that I will always go to bat for. My general, and you'll hear me echo this a ton of times, I'm sure, while we talk, but he's just one of those dudes that, like, I watch him in movies, and even if the movies aren't very good, you're like, why is this dude just not the world's biggest movie star right now?
Yeah.
Like, he's got it, as people say, right? He's just has the thing. And so I think this movie is a good example of that. And I think, yeah, so I think that's where part of I wanted to kind of piggyback this in here to just basically talk about that stuff. But I think also it's the kind of movie that I think when people saw it, and this is maybe a bleak statement, but I think when this movie came out 10 years ago, I don't think we knew how bad it was going to get, and I don't think we knew how good we had it.
That is expressly the point that we need to tag really quickly, because the beginning of this show, we usually go back through how it was received originally, and there are two top critic review blurbs on the Rotten Tomatoes site that I think are so exemplify what we're talking about here. It had mixed reviews, mixed leaning, kind of poor.
Yeah.
And there were two things. Robbie Collin, who writes for the telly in the UK, very good critic, wrote, "Shadow Recruit passes by with fearsome urgency but minimal relevance, like an express train thundering through a country station," which I love, because it does. It's like,
and granted, even with rose-colored glasses and kind of how it's, I think it has appreciated over time, I still think that's correct. Like, I don't think that's like an untrue statement.
That is not untrue, but this is the one. Richard Roper from Ebert and Roper, who took after Gene Siskel, carried the torch after Gene Siskel, wrote this. "This is the very definition of an okay thriller," was his sort of blurb review. Mm-hmm. And I would say this, where we have come to in the cinematic landscape, to be in a time where you could have something that was so okay as Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit. I watched it last night. I was like, holy shit, this movie's actually pretty good. Like, it's got some qualities. Yeah. There's some things I don't like. We'll get to that. But definitely at the time, it was mixed to negative. There was a brief moment there where I think, and Chris Pine suffered this very specifically. He was so unfathomably brilliant taking over from Shatner as Captain Kirk in Star Trek that people were like, this is the guy we're going to reboot other famous characters with. And I just feel like rather than movies, rather than this being a Jack Ryan movie, like I almost feel like a young CIA agent kind of being mentored by Kevin Costner a la Unstoppable, a young train driver being mentored by Denzel Washington. I feel like the David Koepp percussive, really just terrific mechanical script writing structure of the thing would have been served so much better outside of the constraints, or at least the framework of what we know to be Jack Ryan, right? Like, so that's like
I think that this is one of those things, and I don't want to necessarily get in the weeds with this or tangent, but just as a contemporary example, as of this recording.
Yes.
It's almost like I feel like half of the negative things people say about True Detective Night Country.
Yes.
Would disappear if it was just called Night Country.
Yeah. Right. Like, of course.
You know, it's like, it's that kind of thing, right? Like where something gets boxed in by its IP, but the weird sort of catch-22 is that the IP is the thing that gets it greenlit. So
I'm there every week, and now it's like accelerating True Detective Night Country.
Right.
I've watched every single episode. It's been an event in our house. True Detective is, in my mind, like as far as single season shows go, the first series is the perfect series of television, and it is a fucking, it is the Moby Dick white whale of it all. Like one season, Cary Fukunaga's visuals, McConaughey's unbelievable performance, Harrelson, unheralded brilliance, Michelle Monaghan, like you name it, that thing. If you're ever comparing, and I would say this, any other fucking television show against that one series, I'm like, I'm sorry, it's not as good. I've watched True Detective. Like I watched two episodes of Night Country, and then I'm a psycho. I literally watched True Detective season one like twice between and the next episode.
So this is funny. And I said we weren't going to tangent, but here we are. But it is, I bring it up again only because I just think it's something, it's a window into the problems with that are pervasive everywhere, right? Like I think every season of True Detective is basically good on its own terms.
Yes.
And I think what I just said about Night Country applies to every season of True Detective. Like if True Detective's as maligned as season two is, if it was just called a different show, people would be like, oh, this LA noir show with like Colin Farrell and Rachel McAdams fucking rips.
Right? Yeah.
Like,
and if it was just called, how cool would it have been? Like, I think there's a video game. That's probably why they couldn't call it, but how cool would it have been if it was just called LA noir? Like it would have been sick.
Right. And it's anyway, point being, I think what you're saying in regards to Shadow Recruit is that it obviously doesn't have, you know, we're it comes out at basically the beginning of the collapse of the movie store, or maybe right after the beginning. We're sort of moving right into the ongoing middle of the collapse of the movie star as a thing. Right. And I think that's the whirlpool that unfortunately Chris Pine generally gets swept up in, right? Because even again, like Dungeons and Dragons, a lovely blockbuster. I got no problem with it, right?
It's great.
Like, and he's great in it, and everybody has great chemistry. It's a lovely adventure movie, right? But again, that movie doesn't get made if it doesn't have that name on it, right? It can't
of
just
course.
Be called something else, right? So I think you're totally right, because I do think the biggest problem with this movie is the joy, and I think it's a problem the Jack Ryan TV show really, really exacerbates and does way worse than this movie does, is that it kind of tries to abandon the core concept that makes Jack Ryan an enjoyable character.
Yes.
Because the beauty of Jack Ryan is that he's like Indiana Jones and James Bond at the same time, which is to say it's like if Indiana Jones found himself in James Bond situations where you're just kind of like, what am I doing here? I'm not even supposed to be here. Like, you know what I mean? Like that kind of, and so.
And he's also deeply, I think this is why the Harrison Ford and why Alec Baldwin.
Who's your favorite, Ryan? Curious.
I mean, maybe the best movie, let's go with this. Maybe the best movie is The Hunt for Red October. Maybe the best,
probably agree.
Maybe the best Ryan is Patriot Games.
Interesting. I would go Clear and Present Danger, but I would
much
say
of a much
Ford.
Of a muchness. Yeah. Ford kills it as like he's got Ford. He's kind of got that fugitive edge as Jack Ryan in that super smart guy, but like, doesn't mind punching someone every now and then, but that's not the role. He's not like the fighting man as you kind of see it. And I think that's where Krasinski led down, like he's a former soldier.
They turn him into Jason Bourne basically in the TV show. And it really does kind of like,
and look, we already saw 13 Hours that ripped. Okay. We're just going to go back and watch 13 Hours again.
Right. And I think with this, like, I think this does you know, when you see where it went, when you see where the character went, right, like on streaming, I do think Shadow Recruit does a relatively good job of like splitting that Venn diagram a little bit, because what is nice about it, and this is if you have more sort of table setting to do, I'll let you do it. But I do have like a main thesis that I developed on my rewatch.
No, let's do it, because let's come to today, because the only table setting I'll do is I had not revisited this in a dog's age. I think I had watched the first season of The Krasinski Show and I was whelmed. Yeah, like not same. Over, no, not same. Under.
I didn't make it past the first season. I was like,
I was like, okay, fine. Yep. Thank you very much. That was fine. And so I never watched it again, but what has been happening on, especially one of our local streaming services in Australia is, and maybe it's a Paramount thing too. They've kind of like for Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit, for Hunt for Red October, for Clear and Present Danger, or I can't remember what the Affleck one is. What's the Affleck? Some of All Fears.
Also a good one. Yeah.
I haven't seen that in a dog's age either. But with all those movies, they've kind of packaged them to have the same covers. So like my son calls them aisles. One of the aisles, so I like to use that now. One of the aisles of things has all of the Jack Ryan movies with similar covers. Like they're almost like Mission Impossible posters. They're all the same. Yeah. And so I've kept seeing it, but reflexively, as you do, I'm like, Patriot Games is it. Like, I need to see Sean Bean. Like, it's happening. Yeah. And I watch that, or I see Unbound, as some people call it. And I love to see that. And then I'll go, oh, shit, you know, it's a night for the hunt. You know, it's a cold night. It's time for the Hunt for Red October again. You know, doing those things that I think people like you and I do together. And we find each other at weird hours on Twitter and just like give each other nods. Like,
yeah, it's like, I've had like a margarita and it's late and you're like waking up and I'm like, Hey man,
I'm watching Copycat. Fuck yeah, yeah, Connor. Yes.
That's exactly.
You were
on Twitter this morning, weren't you? But anyway, no, so it is funny. I would say just even along those lines, there is a nice little 4K Blu-ray package of these movies. Mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for when everything gets collected nicely with like consistent artwork. And so this Jack Ryan collection has that. I would recommend anybody get it. It's nice. But yeah, my rewatch, my general relationship with this movie is I liked it when it came out. I remember specifically when it came out, and this is our mutual friend Corey Everett, I remember, had said this. We used to do movie trivia back in the day all the time. And I remember right after the weekend this had come out, we were all at trivia together. We were kind of talking about it. And Corey had mentioned something that I've never forgotten as it pertains to this movie, because he was 100% right. He goes, if this movie came out in 1994, it would have come out in the middle of the summer and it would have made a ton of money and Chris Pine would be the biggest movie star in the world.
Yes.
And it's not even like you wouldn't even change anything about the movie. Like it could just be basically the same movie and it would have just ripped and people would have loved it. And I think that just dovetails back into what I was saying about like, it's just kind of a movie out of time in a weird way. Like, that has nothing to do with but has less to do with the actual quality of the movie versus like what it's up against in the climate of movies. Right. And I think what's funny about, you know, Brana directing it, because this is his like second huge like kind of company man working director kind of thing, right? Like he's directed, it's funny, I pulled it up quickly, he's directed way more movies than you think he has.
I know. That was another line we were going to go down. Yes, absolutely.
And he's directed way more movies than you think he has, so he is, I think, like undoubtedly
24 fucking movies.
Like he's
Quentin Tarantino, crazy. 9.
Right, right.
Michael
right.
Mann.
He's very, he's a very accomplished director, right? So, and I think, I know people kind of hem and haw on him as a director. I think he's largely a pretty good, very capable director.
Yeah.
And I think this movie's a good example of that, because now he, to my knowledge, took on this movie after a couple other people had dropped out. Mm-hmm. And it sort of just presented itself to him. And he was like, yeah, you know what? Sure, why not? And I think, you know, if you're Kenneth Branagh and if you know anything about Kenneth Branagh and the way he operates, like, I'm sure he jumped at the chance to also cast himself as like a scenery chewing James Bond villain, right? Like,
and also we've got to get to that, because I think at the time we didn't appreciate the commitment to the bit that he was doing for this character. He speaks in fluent Russian. It's shot in Moscow.
And I think it's largely a pretty good villain performance. Like it's almost like if you took the Tenet performance, which is at 11, and you dialed it back to like an 8.
Yeah.
Like You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of the energy that I...
But Chris Nolan saw this and was like, oh, he can do this again.
Must have, kind of. Like, yeah. And I think that, just to go back to, like, at the time, right, I generally really liked this movie, but kind of on the, hey, they don't make them like they used to type thing. I would say where it stands in the pantheon of Jack Ryan movies is... maybe right in the middle. I like it more than most, so I would probably put it somewhere near the middle. But I do think that Pine is like one of the better Ryans. And I think you could almost see them teeing this up where, like, if they were going to make two more, maybe the second one would have been a little bit more Clear and Present Danger-y, or he's just a little bit more of an analyst. But it is funny because it does feel like the studio notes are like, we can't make him like a fucking nerd. Like, it's like almost this, like, he's got to get in fights, you know? And what I love about it is, and this is me projecting onto the movie, I have not read this anywhere, but this is my thesis on the movie.
Right.
It feels like Brana is like, if you want me to ape a bunch of other spy thriller properties, right? I'm going to show you what that looks like when Jack Ryan does it and why it doesn't work.
Yes.
So it's almost like the movie fails on purpose, because if you go through it, right, there is at one point in the movie, it's a good kind of Kmart version of like a better scene in Casino in the beginning of Casino Royale, but there's a fight in a bathroom, right? That Jack Ryan has when his bodyguard, who is sent to pick him up from the airport by Kenneth Branagh, turns on him as essentially as an assassin. Spoilers. We can spoil. Right?
We can it's talk. 10 yeah, years, guys. I'm yeah. sorry. This is happening.
Watch the movie though. It's fun. Yeah. And it's under 2 hours. It's like 100 minutes long.
100 minutes. It does not outstay its welcome.
Yeah.
That great. Was a nice relief.
Yeah, totally. And so basically there's this fight in a bathroom. Pine winds up killing a guy. You get the idea this is the first time he's ever killed somebody in that fashion. Now, granted, they do give you the quick Jack Ryan military helicopter crash intro to tee up his character. So the movie, I think, does a good job of, like, and this is where I meant before by, like, trying to get to both sides of the Venn diagram of, like, you believe he could win in a fight, but it's not necessarily the kind of person he is, right?
Yes.
And so this sequence happens, and it's like a lesser version of the Casino Royale opening scene. And afterwards, he is like traumatized by it.
Yeah.
And needs someone to clean it up for him. So it's like the most anti-James Bond thing that could happen after a James Bond fight scene, right?
Yes, yes.
Then later in the movie, and I'm kind of jumping around, so forgive me, but then later in the movie, there is a Kmart version of a Mission Impossible heist scene,
yep, right?
That involves Kevin Costner spotting with a sniper rifle, kind of Keira Knightley slipping in to sort of do a little bit of a honeypot for Kenneth Branagh while Chris Pine slips away and does the Ethan Hunt / Simon Pegg situation, hacking into a computer, right? While he calls his buddy who's somewhere
else. It's very
else.
Benji. It's very Benji.
The whole deal, right? But what's great about it is they get fucking caught. It works because they get the info they need, but like they're not slick about it. So it's this weird, beautiful thing where like Branagh is putting in these, like, he's almost kind of like, he knows what he's doing. He's like, look, like Jack Ryan is not Ethan Hunt and he's not James Bond. And here's what happens when you put him in an Ethan Hunt scenario and you put him in a James Bond scenario. It just doesn't work. But like but he makes it work for the movie, which I think is really clever. I think that's like a really fun way to go about acknowledging what the benefits are of the IP you're working within, and also kind of thumbing your nose at the people who want you to shoehorn into it at the same time.
And I think you're so right about that. And the only thing that I would say is that's where you can feel like the climactic moments of the movie, the climactic sort of scene where Jack takes on the terrorist who's about to go and you know, set off a gigantic bomb underneath some buildings in Wall Street to corrupt the financial markets, where he like jumps on a motorbike and does all this stuff. That's like
that. I love that you said that with the cadence of like, we like he goes and gets an omelet and a coffee.
But that's basic, like, you know, because that's what, that's the beat that has to happen for this story. But yes, like, it's deadly serious. Yeah. And also the panic and the way that it's orchestrated and the way that the police are responding, also just reflecting now in 2024, very realistic, because there was like a semi police military response level in New York for like a full decade and a bit after the events of September 11. So, you know, that is incredible, very tactile and authentic. And I think that's really great. There's just a bit of that kind of, you can feel the studio pressure and them saying like, Jack needs to be the guy who saves the day in order for this to all happen. And he has like this big like chase scene, and it feels a little bit like it undercuts the brilliance. And I think you're so right, of putting him in a James Bond scene and him completely like being traumatized, putting him in an Ethan Hunt Mission Impossible scene, it kind of ballses it up and it doesn't work to perfection. And then the signature scene of the movie is them calculating on a plane with a bunch of analysts, like find this, let's put the puzzle pieces together. That's
you
like
a quick, you get a quick Gemma Chan for your money.
Oh, love me some quick Gemma Chan for our money.
And it's just funny because she's just like the person in the chair. And I did want to spot check, because when I was watching it, I was thinking like, she's making whole decisions with this very small character here, where she works for the CIA. So she is, you know, she's like, I could see her process in her head where she's like, yeah, maybe I'm just some person from like the Midwest who went to go work for the CIA as an analyst. Cause her accent here it's not bad. It's just like she's leaning into like almost what seems like a Minnesota nice accent, kind of.
So good.
You do watch it, listener, just pay special attention to that. Cause I feel like she wrote herself like a whole paragraph about her character and where her character came from, possibly.
But yeah, so that's what I think is the one, I guess. It's not even the way that it is orchestrated. It's just the way that it is executed at the end and like the beats that have to happen for Jack Ryan to become a hero. So that was always the bit that really grated against me when I watched it. But what I want to say, as far as it aging, you are so right. And our mutual friend Corey Everett is so right in that the lesson of decades past, of movies past, dear listeners, is that when you are getting a new movie star, you put them alongside an older movie star and you see if they can stand up to the weight of that person. And it's only by them standing up to and matching the sort of energy cadence, lifting themselves up to that kind of person, that you go, that person's a movie star. Great examples are like, you know, Ryan Gosling in The Nice Guys against Russell Crowe, or Ryan Gosling with Harrison Ford in Blade Runner 2049. You're looking at him and you're like, man, this fucking guy is so good. Like, he just knows what he's doing. He's great. But Chris Pine did that with Unstoppable. He did it. Yeah. Like, he stood against.
He already had that moment.
Sure. He had it with Denzel. Yeah. And in this movie, the smartest thing ever is having him with Kevin Costner, who
they have great chemistry.
Amazing chemistry. Yeah. And Costner is like, stop smiling with that sort of like, you know, Boy Scout grin. It's like, dude, you invented it. Like, he's smiling just like you did. Like, so it's so great.
I do love the meta casting of Costner, because, and I don't know if this happened twice, so maybe you can correct me. I know it at least happened once that he
definitely happened
down.
Once. Yeah. He turned it down
at least once. I think they approached him twice. Cause I think they approached him for Red October and then again for Patriot Games.
I'm not sure if they did Patriot Games, but the Red October one is like multiple sourced. It's not just IMDb trivia. Okay. It's like they offered him the gig and he was like, I'm doing Dances with Wolves.
Yeah. The point being, I do love that he's like the not Jack Ryan, just kind of slipping in as this mentor of the Jack Ryan movie. But yeah, and I think you're so right about the ending, because it really, it's, and again, this is, I'm not really knocking Branagh in a formal sense, because I think he directs.
No, formally, he directs the shit out of it. It's
a
great.
Good sequence. It's a good sequence. I think it's executed properly. But it just, it doesn't seem to, like, there are a couple ways you could fix it to keep the Jack Ryan of it all. Like,
there's one way to fix it. We haven't done this ever, but like the one way to fix it is simply this. Jack Ryan jumps on a motorbike, follows the police van. There's no interplay between the van and the bike. He follows him subtly into the tunnels. He goes down, he gets lost. He then finds the van. He sneaks up to the van. Rather than having a punch up with the guy, sees the guy in the back of the van tinkering with a bomb. Sneaks into the front of the car and just floors it.
Right.
And that fixes the mood. Like, for me, it's like, that's it. Like, he finds the van, he gets it, he gets in, and then he's like driving like a lunatic to knock the guy around so he can't blow up the bomb. He can't set it off. Like, but you don't get to see the timer on the bomb necessarily. And it's like, that's the only thing, unless you had like a big. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, I think if you wanted to make the punch up work, the other guy needs to start it. Like, Ryan needs to be like sneakily trying to defuse the bomb or something.
Yes.
And then the guy takes him by surprise and kind of mostly kicks the shit out of him.
Like, yeah. That's also
like basically how you need to make that work.
Also. Yeah. And the punch up, I would prefer the punch up of like the guy is like getting thrown around and ragdolled in the car and hits Jack and he's throwing a hand back and smacking him in the face. And it's really rough and tumble. And it's very intentionally awkward. And Jack's throwing his arm back and hitting the seat and hitting the wall and, you know, all that stuff, knocking the mirror off. Like, it feels like that would be the Ryan thing. And then the guy drags him in, like drags him into the back of the car and the car's like wailing. They look out, Jack dives out of the car, like bang. It's still awesome. He's still heroic. He's still done it, but it doesn't have
still Jack Ryan. He's still like
maintains the through line of the character.
I feel like that's the thing. He always has to be like punching up. Right.
Exactly.
That's like the winning quality.
So for me, I think that that's the only thing that I like, you know, in a movie that I was so expecting to be a slog because of just my memory of receiving it at the time. I was watching, I was like, oh, this has got pace and it's smart and it's got pathos. And it's like, even just like great subtle things. Like, he walks up, he goes, oh, why'd you, Costa observing him in rehab, why did you change? Also, with the greatest respect and very respectfully, Keira Knightley is so strikingly beautiful in this movie. I mean, obviously she's beautiful, but this is like, her charm is just off the charts. And also Chris Pine is so cute that it's like, it makes so much sense. They're just such a hot couple.
I just want to see him smooch the whole time. That's
so cute.
Yeah, no, I think that's another part of the dynamic that I do think Brana's experience in Shakespeare, and not to say that this movie is Shakespearean, I'm not like elevating it that way.
Yeah.
But in like the tit for tat type stuff of like, of Much Ado About Nothing and things like that, like, it's he's got experience there, and I think that sings with a lot of their scenes. I think they have a pretty good chemistry. She, I think, was like fourth or fifth on the list. She was not high up, and I do think, and I'm not putting her down, I do think you can see her kind of butting up against the material a little bit, but I think she pulls it off.
She does.
But it is interesting because you are like, there are scenes where, especially early on, you're kind of like, let's see if this is gonna work. And then like I think ultimately she comes out on top, but it's an interesting performance to watch because I do think, I have no idea the timing of when she came onto the movie either, so who knows how much prep she had, all that stuff. So like, you do see her kind of calculating her way through almost all of her decisions. But that said, I do think they have good chemistry. And this movie has one of my all-time favorite beats in a movie like this, in that she thinks Jack is cheating on her.
Yes.
He's in the CIA. He can't tell her. And he is, at this point, not a CIA analyst in the way that he was in the other Jack Ryan films. He's like undercover at a Wall Street firm.
Would you say, Connor, that he's a shadow recruit?
Indeed. And at some point, he's no longer an analyst. He's operational now. Is the big turning point. He's shadow recruiting at a Wall Street investment firm.
Shadow recruiting.
now an adjective.
And so while he's doing that, he is with Keira Knightley, who's a doctor, as she is in the books and other movies and stuff. And she basically thinks that he's cheating on her. And one of the nicer beats is ultimately he has to go to Moscow to conduct an audit of Kenneth Branagh's company, who is secretly sort of setting money aside. They're investigating for potential like terrorism slush funds, basically.
Yes.
But what he's actually doing is he's like basically propping up the US dollar to pull out from under it and cause like a global collapse, basically. Is essentially that's his villain plot. But while Pine is in Moscow doing the audit, Knightley basically surprises him, right?
Yeah.
And she thinks she's going to catch him kind of red-handed to a degree, and she's sort of spiraling because she's just like at her wit's end, right? And she's tired of being lied to. And she's like, just tell me the truth. Are you having an affair, right? And he point blank is like, I'm in the CIA. And I think a lesser version of this movie would have her laugh or go, come on, or whatever. And instead, Kep being super smart, it feels like a Kep beat.
Yeah.
Just has her go,
Oh, thank God.
And like, she's so happy that's the answer. She's so happy the preposterous situation of her Wall Street boyfriend being in the CIA is the thing. And I've watched this movie a few times now, gets me every time. It's so lovely. And I think 50% of the reason it works is Cap, and the other 50 is Keira Knightley, just like totally owning the moment.
We're in the CIA. We're shadow recruiting, but we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and we're going to discuss what we've learned now since the release of Shadow Recruit.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, Connor, we're back. Really quickly, this is the segment of the Decade Project where we sort of talk about what we've learned. And I think that's a great topic to have a look at. And I want to go back to something. I want to tag on something you said before, because I think it's going to bring us back around to sort of your conclusions of the movie, which is the thing that I love about Jack Ryan as a character in the best versions of Jack Ryan is that the villains in Jack Ryan things are fucking awesome. Like the best villains... You know, like really the best movie, as I said, probably earlier, is like The Hunt for Red October. So you've got Sean Connery sort of villain slash unknowable thing. They eventually come together, etc. Then there's other antagonistic forces that are trying to do that. But I think that Branagh does this so well. He creates like this wholly three-dimensional, very interesting, weird, particular, peculiar villain character, full on Russian, speaking Russian the whole time, then speaking English, amazing character, sets him up and spends a hell of a lot of time. And then that makes Jack's ability to figure out and calculate when he's able to step up to that level is that shows how impressive Jack Ryan is. But you really need to spend a hell of a lot of time contextualizing that. And I think that's what I miss about these kind of movies, is because traditional thrillers sometimes don't give the attention to the person that's there on the other side. You know, even...
Yeah.
Even in the inferences, sometimes it's not about being in the weeds with them, but it's about building up to them and how you're going to get these two characters together. And so when I come back and I go, what have we learned? Like, to that point of the review, you know, it's like a fine film. It's an okay thriller. This is beyond okay. Like, this is, we were so spoiled to that time of our lives. Yeah. It was post the peak of the early 2000s, which is like the, you know, the year of No Country for Old Men and There Will Be Blood and Michael Clayton. And, you know, you think of those Zodiac, you think of those big years in the late 2000s where you're like, wow, like we'll get really high quality movies all in competition. And you come to this movie and people are like, oh, it's fine. But now in an era of streaming where like this movie bounces between, you know, Maryland and bounces to New York City and it's shooting in downtown and it's shooting in Moscow, yeah, and it's
it
shooting.
It feels like it's all on location. It looks good. It's like,
looks amazing.
Like, it's so wild. Like, and it's funny to think about. I mean, the reason we're talking about it, it's 10 years old, but it looks like it's 20 years old.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. 20 or 30 years old. Cause it's definitely a throwback. Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think the lesson for me is like just the caliber of actors, the quality of the cast across the board, even though so much is, you know, so much of the cast has to be like Russian and stuff like that. Even like Colm Feore, who like plays Rob Berenger, a great character actor. Like, you've great got these great character actors. It just, I don't know, it stacks up, man. It stacks up. And I regret my preliminary like sort of spicy take on it, but I'm very grateful that now, like 10 years later, to be like, with a couple of minor fixes, I think it would have helped to overweigh some of the gripes that people had with it.
Totally.
And I think if people look at this thing with fresh eyes, it's going to be a really rewarding decade project rewatch and be like, hey, this is actually pretty good. Like, it's, you know, I don't know about The Sum of All Fears yet. Haven't done that again recently.
I would encourage you, if you came back warm on this movie, I would encourage you to rewatch Sum of All Fears.
Sum of All Fears is a Phil Alden Robinson joint.
Yeah, it is.
So,
and you're in the throes, right?
Too many minutes. I'm in the throes of too many minutes. So, you know, it feels like, I feel like I have to watch it. I'll definitely do it. And like, again, Sum of All Fears, I just quickly opened up the cast list. Affleck, Morgan Freeman, James Cromwell, John Beasley, Bruce McGill, Philip Baker Hall. Stop. I don't need to know anymore. Like, that's enough of my.
That's before you even get Liev Schreiber as John Clark.
Like, no, haven't even gotten to Liev. That's fine. You know, we'll that's enough. You know, that's enough to revisit Sum of All Fears. But so, yeah, like that's, I think, the big thing that I've learned is like the entire approach to this production is quality, 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 big people, big stars, big actors, big screenwriters, like the king, David Koepp. Yeah. Like, bang, 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 bang. It just seems like, oh, imagine them making this today. You can see everything they would have done wrong.
Exactly. Well, and I think the TV show is sort of an example of that, right? Like, I think that's sort of the funny problem is like, oh yeah, like we, and then I guess that's what I meant when I said like, we didn't know how good we had it. Right. Like,
yes,
but yeah. And I think especially like, if you're someone out there who like me even continues to sort of see someone like Pine, I'll say it like continue to be almost underused even when he does great work. Right. Or kind of just not getting the kind of level of, I think, general support that I feel like he should.
It's funny, and even Tarantino, right? Like, what we've learned out of this is that some of the biggest filmmakers in the world, and Tarantino probably most notably, is like, my favorite Chris is Pine.
It's the correct answer. It's because
they all have different great qualities. And sure. I'm my one is personally, the more that Chris Hemsworth becomes Australian Arnold Schwarzenegger in movies like Extraction, I'm happy. Because
sure,
I'm like,
sure, right.
We finally get to see him be the truly charming motherfucker that he is.
Totally.
When he's doing one-liners and hitting, slap fighting with kids or bashing someone with a car door or like, you know, all that sort of stuff. Like, That's the shit where I'm and holding gigantic machine guns with these huge pulsating muscles. Yeah, that's what I want to fucking see. I don't need him in. I mean, obviously, Black Hat. Shout out to the Soy Boys.
Doesn't Black Hat feel like a little bit of the beginning of that? If we're being honest, like,
yeah,
because his best parts of Black Hat are when he like fully unleashes the fact that he's like a violent man. You're like, you're like, oh.
This guy's a psycho. Yeah.
With your magazine armor. Look at you.
your magazine Great. Great.
But no, I think that's a great point. I mean, my thing with him is I'm sure other people have said this, but like the short elevator pitch on Chris Pine is that he's Harrison Ford and Tom Cruise in one actor.
Yes.
And like, and what a gift, right? Like, I think it is kind of the thing, but
don't know how they've fucked that up so many times, right? Like, because
kind of my point. Like, if you've liked him in Dungeons and Dragons and stuff, and you're looking for just like more things to enjoy him in, I would say watch this movie because it really is kind of crazy to like. And you mentioned Star Trek before, and I should I'll shout out our other mutual friend Gavin Medius of the Mixed Reviews. Right. I did a whole episode on Pine with them, so if you want to hear me go real long just on Chris Pine, you can. Check that out.
But it's like what happens is he has to have like three movies that aren't great or use him incorrectly. Exactly. And then he has one that's so incredible that you're like, what the hell? Like, you know, you go Star Trek, then you got like Hell or High Water. Amazing. Wonder Woman. He's terrific. I actually immediately recognized him in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse as the first Peter Parker.
Right, right.
And I was like, and in my head, I was like, fuck, how good would he have been as Peter Parker?
He would be great. Right. He's
Peter Perfect. Like that's who he is. Mm-hmm. The smile, the look, the charm, the blonde hair. You're like, man, alive.
The wild thing, and not this is not any kind of like an underrated movie or whatever, but if you're not sold on Chris Pine, listener, I want you to rewatch just like the early scenes of 2009 Star Trek. Yeah. Because it really is, you're like watching a star be born in real time. It's like he comes out of the woodwork, and when he's doing like the little finger guns and the Kobayashi Maru test and all that stuff, you're just like literally like, who is this fucking guy? Like, and it is, we don't get that a lot.
No.
And it's so wonderful to watch. And to your point, Blake, it is just, it's weird. And I think this movie is partially guilty of it too, even though I like it. But yeah, it is just so weird to see like moviedom writ large keep dropping the ball with him in a way that, you know,
I'm just like, for the love of God, can he get cast in this Quentin Tarantino movie as a supporting character?
Yeah,
like if he's your favorite,
please
fucking get him cast him as an actor. Like a crazy actor.
Michael Mann, put him in Heat 2.
Like, Michael Mann, one of our big guys, one of the big sort of poet laureates of like dude cinema needs to get their fucking hands on this guy. And like even Joe Carnahan, who like people thought was that guy, he just didn't do it.
I mostly don't like their collaborations, frankly.
Yeah, I don't really like them either.
But I do appreciate them for the thing of like, I guess at least Carnahan's like giving the dude an outlet to do stretch, you know, like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Full beard, complete weirdness.
More than anybody else outside David McKenzie is giving him, you know what I mean? So it's David McKenzie directed Hell or High Water, right? Do I have that correct?
McKenzie. Yeah. Written by our boy Taylor Sheridan, who was who has a great relationship with one Kevin Costner in this, which is famous.
Back. It's a whole circle. It's a whole
circle of life. All right, so let's go some sliding doors. You touched on it before. Keira Knightley, not the only one considered for this wife. It's literally a lineup of like all the big actors of the late 2000s and especially the early teens of, you know, the last decade. Keira Knightley, Felicity Jones, Evangeline Lilly, Kate Beckinsale, and Jessica Biel were all selected potentials for Jack Ryan's wife.
I think other than Beckinsale, I think Knightley is the only one that makes it out of there alive, if I'm being honest.
Like, true.
I think, not to completely dismiss Felicity Jones, I've never found her that compelling on screen. No. Some people do. I
Jessica Biel, I'm the same. Jessica Biel, yeah, Evangeline Lilly. I was never a Lost guy, so I was never really sold on that. And yeah. I think that the Whit Stillman, Kate Beckinsale movies are someone who actually knows how to use her for
absolutely. Love and friendship
is
like. Look, you don't want to bring me back to talk about that movie for some reason.
When was fucking Love and Friendship?
That was 2016, I think. So
wait.
2 years from now, you can earmark
it is 2016. 2026, yeah. You better believe we are talking about Love and Friendship on the Decade Project. I love that movie.
I love that movie so much.
She is out of this world in that movie.
She's, I think, the only one who would have brought the right energy to this. And granted, like, I'm gonna be honest, might have been a little beneath her. I think it's a little beneath Knightley too, if I'm like to be and I do think this movie certainly gives the Kathy Ryan character more to, I guess she's not Kathy Ryan yet in this movie, but certainly gives that character more, like, you know, she gets to be a honeypot in a Mission Impossible sequence. Like, that's, none of the other movies have that, you know. You get your, we didn't even talk about the light bulb torture scene sequence, which is another insane moment.
Very, very insane. And also, we spoke at the beginning, so this is a great sliding doors, you know, callback, is we spoke at the beginning about this movie not being, would have been much better if it wasn't a Jack Ryan movie. Well, according to IMDb trivia, take this with what you will, the original screenplay was written by Adam Kozad and it was called Dubai. It was just an action movie that originally had Eric Bana.
Makes a lot of sense.
Bana would be really good.
Maybe not a good Jack Ryan, but he would be good for whatever that action thriller was.
Whatever that was, that would be fantastic. That stuff is fantastic. So yeah, really, really there. The other one was, there was, take this with what you will as well. There were plans to do like a bit of a cinematic universe with Thomas Harper having like a bridging series and then Jack Ryan coming back to the movie. Yeah. So it was looking
Thomas Harper is Kevin Costner.
Kevin Costner's character. Yeah. So that character was going to be there. So
they ultimately made that. So Without Remorse, I don't know if you know that book or if you've read it. That's like that's the John Clark origin story book. They ultimately made that movie in the universe of the new Jack Ryan with Michael B. Jordan.
Yes.
That movie's not very good, I don't think.
Without Remorse, I think it's Stefan Sollima. Really fucking great action direction. Maybe not as a holistic movie like that resonates with you that you're going to go back and revisit again. But I'm like, the action in the movie is shot impeccably.
I'll say this, and this is just the case for movie theaters. I bet you if I saw that movie in a movie theater instead of on streaming, I would think of it at least being 15% better.
I can't agree with you more. Like, every movie in a movie theater is the way you need to see a movie.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
I was around the time, it was like 2 days before Ferrari finally fucking screened in this country. And one of my friends goes, "Hey, I got the disc. Do you want the disc?" And I go, I see it in the theater because it's a Michael Mann movie. I'm going to church, baby. This is what's happening. Speaking of casting though, Ryan Gosling. Considered for Ryan and James Franco, this guy considered for everything that he was totally wrong for. Seriously.
Yeah.
Gosling is better. That's closer.
I think Pine is the correct choice. I really don't think there's a better.
Completely agree.
Of the time, I don't think. And even, I'm going to be honest, like when the TV show got announced and they announced Krasinski, I was kind of like, yeah, I guess he feels right. But what's weird is I feel like Krasinski would feel more right as a bookish Jack Ryan. And they like went the other way with him, which that's why the show fully doesn't work for me. But I do think Pine is the correct choice. Gosling would have been fine. He would have been good.
I mean, look, it makes sense because later you see Blade Runner 2049 and, you know, Harrison Ford's one of his heroes and you're like, yeah, he's got it all too. Gosling's career path though is the one that we wish that Pine had out of those Chris's, because he's got, like, if you do the combination, the Venn diagram of all of the great Chris movies of those, you know, Pratts and Pines and Hemsworths and oh my God, I'm blanking on Captain America.
Chris Evans.
Yeah. If you look at that, combined, all of those guys have great picks and excellent performances in big and small movies, but none of them collectively have like the best individual resume. Where if you look at just Gosling's resume, it's fucking outstanding, like top to bottom.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Amazing comedy, amazing drama, amazing, like, you know, neo-noir, amazing. Like, it's just like bang, bang, bang. He's got so many diverse, brilliant things there. So, it's really amazing. This is the first, and I think this hurts. It's the first theatrically released movie featuring the Jack Ryan character not to be nominated for an Academy Award.
Let me think. What would I have given it? Just giggles and grins. Cinematography's nice looking, but not good enough.
No.
It's tough.
Could Branagh have snuck in with like a completely out of left field best supporting actor?
Would have needed, we don't need to look at the field that year or whatever, but like would have needed to be, I think. And I like Branagh in this movie. I think it would have needed to be like a really sparse field for him to sneak in on that. But yeah,
and,
Like
two final things on the sliding doors of it all.
Sure.
Keira Knightley is going to come up again this year in the Decade Project because she's in two movies in 2014. One of them is Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit. The other, The Imitation Game, which was Academy Award nominated and won for Best Screenplay. A terrific movie. A kind of forgotten gem. If you know why, though?
Because it's a period piece.
Yeah, of course.
It's the Knightley period piece combination of like, maybe that's the thing that I feel like she's butting up against, even though I like her in this movie. It might be the thing where I'm like, yeah, you just don't seem like you exist in the present day. Like,
other than Ben, that like Beckham, you know. And Paul Pine did give an interview about this movie and they said, will they ever make a sequel?
Yeah.
And he goes, he said, no, I don't think it made enough money for that to happen. That's one of my deep regrets that we didn't totally get that right.
Yeah, it is a bummer because it's just like, I don't know. Yeah, like it's just a weird, I think it really is just a case of bad timing because there's enough wrong with this movie to actually justify it being like so slept on and yet.
But also like you look at Kenneth Branagh a few years later and he's making the Poirot films, you know, the first one, you know, Murder on the Orient Express, which is terrific. And then what was that second one? It was like, Death on the Nile, which was ghastly. I haven't even brought myself
like,
to see.
I kind of digest all of those basically the same. Certainly those first two where I don't think they're particularly great, but I always am just in the tank for like an ensemble murder mystery with handsome
people. But that's exactly what I was going to say. Can you imagine though, this is an ensemble thriller. Can you imagine if it made like it probably made more than enough money to exist now? Can you imagine a movie that immediately headlines Chris Pine and Branagh can just be the director, immediately headlines Chris Pine, Kevin Costner, Keira Knightley.
Right.
And then you build the supporting cast around them. It's like, oh, we could have had three of these. Totally. Yes, like it's make
totally.
Like, and you go, okay, cool. Let's do the books. Let's do this and that.
And the one thing we kind of glossed over is like the cinematic universe that was going to get created was going to be initially Without Remorse. And Tom Hardy was like the one that everyone was talking about being the John Clark of this iteration of that universe. So like what I'm really saying is we would have gotten a This Means War reunion.
Which I like that movie. I remember liking it, Connor. I haven't seen it in a long fucking time, though.
If listeners want to hear me, I won't go into it. If they want to hear me talk about that, they can listen to that Mixed Reviews episode.
Go to Mixed Reviews. Great show.
Short version is that the real kind of problem, and it's a sorry to Reese, but Reese is the real kind of fish out of water in that movie because Pine and Hardy both kind of know what What movie?
Pine and Hardy, both absolutely weird sexual units. And Reese is in one of her very like Sweet Home Alabama modes in that movie. Yes. She's not quite like, you know, she's not gone wild Reese where she's just like off the chain. And I just feel like you really need a little kind of like minxy sex pot in that movie to really make it sing. But anyway, that's a completely different set of opinions. But yeah, look, that's Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit. I've got a new segment that I'm trying to surprise my guests on. And I'm going to increasingly fail at that surprise as we start to release episodes. Do you know, Connor O'Donnell, what your top five movies of 2014 were? Do you know?
Oh man. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this when you asked me to do it. I would say off the top of my head, not really thinking about it, but off the top of my head, favorite films 2014. The Viggo Mortensen movie, Hoha, I think it's pronounced. Have you seen this movie, Blake?
No.
It is. I kind of the less said about it, the better, because it just does some stuff that you're not necessarily expecting, and it's kind of wild. I just would happily recommend it to anybody. It's slow cinema, so I'll say that. But just quick synopsis is like a father and a daughter are making a journey from Denmark through this sort of unknown desert that quote unquote exists beyond the realms of beyond the confines of civilization.
Wow.
It just gets kind of weirdly cerebral. I don't know. It's not terribly long. It's 100 minutes. It's like a relative.
Anything that doesn't outstay its welcome is almost like, no, it helps.
I would preface it is like slow cinema, so just bear that in mind, but I like that movie quite a bit. Gone Girl, another one I like quite a bit from 2014. Right. That's another one I liked a lot when I saw it. In the intervening years, I kind of was like, maybe that one's not as good as I remember. And then I recently rewatched it and I was like, oh no, this thing is a fucking banger. So I'll put Gone Girl on there. So that's two. Phoenix. Christian Petzl's film Phoenix.
Great movie.
Which is incredible. Would definitely throw that out.
I haven't seen that in an age as well.
Yeah, honestly, fuck. I should have picked Phoenix. now that I'm thinking about it.
No, it's just funny because so many people, and part of the reason that I asked this question is because so many people pick what their faves are. So I wonder, like, has it changed? You know, since then.
The one thing definitely on the list actually is Edge of Tomorrow, and I think I lobbied that up to you. I knew you had just talked about it on another podcast, so I was like, nah, let me use my time to talk about Shadow Recruit, but. Edge of Tomorrow, I think definitely one of the best films of 2014 for me. Like, I mean, you know me, I'm a Cruise boy. Like,
yeah, I'm such an immense fan of that movie. It's always heartening to hear that someone such as yourself that has impeccable taste also loves that movie.
Oh, go on.
Oh, oh no, please don't stop. Don't stop.
So that's what? That's four? That's four?
That's four.
Yeah, Phoenix. Okay. Yeah, okay. And then let's see. You know, I'm going to cheat here a little bit. It's not a top movie, but of that year for sure. But it's definitely one I'll just shout out. And I think more people should watch is the Scott Frank movie, Walk Among the Tombstones.
A ripper. I'm so glad you mentioned it.
Honestly, why didn't I pick that movie either? Fuck. I really,
we still have so much of the year to go, Connor.
So much.
There's so much to go. You might have to come back and do a Walk Amongst the Tombstones if it's not on the list. I've got to quickly look at the list because there is a long list, and I've been pretty cagey about what I'm actually saying. Like, hold on.
You can cut this out. It's fine. But
no, yeah. This is fine. I'm trying to see if I can find a Walk Among the Tombstones. You know what, Connor? It's not on the list.
Go on. Yeah, I will gladly return to talk about Walk Among the Tombstones.
Let's do it.
I'll just put this out in the ether because I don't care if it's me that programs it. I so badly want to like program a retrospective of films that are like Peter Yates adjacent, you know, like movies that feel born from the Friends of Eddie Coyle and things like that. And Walk Among the Tombstones is
and the
one
Hot
of those
Rock
movies,
the Hot Rock,
right? Like those, all those kinds of movies, like you know, like Jack Reacher, the first Jack Reacher feels like a post Peter Yates movie kind of thing. Yeah. Like, so all those kinds of movies are movies that I just, I don't know. It's they're exactly my shit. Walk Among the Tombstones is a dad stance movie. It's a movie where, like, if you have it on, you're gonna stop at least a couple times and do the dad stance in front of the TV and really absorb it. So I'll just quick recap: Ho Ha, Phoenix, Gone Girl, Edge of Tomorrow, / Live Die Repeat, and Walk Among the Tombstones. Check all those out.
Oh, sensational. Well, look, man, thank you so much. Connor is the great co-host of the B-Side podcast. Also, check him out on Mixed Reviews, big friends of the show. Love Gavin. Love that show. So go and check him out talking about Chris Pine exclusively. Man, have I missed any of the things, the plug for you?
A general beast. I don't know when this will drop. As of this recording, though, we just did an episode on Jodie Foster, which was a really
so
good
this,
one.
For our patrons who are hearing this, like right now, hear it. If you're listening to this later in 2024, which you may be on the main feed, you can go and search up the B-Side podcast and subscribe.
You can catch up with it. So we just did Jodie Foster. Right. We're prepping for Sigourney Weaver right now. So that'll be coming up soon. So that's a fun one. And that's about it. But thanks for having me, buddy.
Thank you for being a part of the show. And now we have to look forward to dad stancing together. For a Walk Among the Tombstones at some point this year, because like 2014 is a gift that keeps on unwrapping and presenting more and more gifts in it. So thank you for being here. And thank you for suggesting this movie, because genuinely, I think kind of like, I know what so many of these movies do on the tin, like from the outset, because I like them myself or those sorts of things. And I've got my favorites of the year, which I'll talk about later in the year, but thank you so much for Jack Ryan Shadow Recruit as a revisit, because it was actually like a very, very enjoyable rewatch. So thank you for recommending it. And thank you for staying exactly who you are, because it gives me comfort that your brand of taste is just perfectly aligned with mine. So thank you so much for suggesting this. It was awesome.
Hey, always a pleasure, buddy. I'm always happy to have one more Shadow Recruit in my corner.
I was going to say, as podcasting producers, that's what we do. We Shadow Recruit guests for shows and surprise them. So, I'm loving Shadow Recruit as an adjective. So thank you for giving us that too.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient. Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.